Welcome to the MS Dev Show, episode number 146. This week we talk with Samina Passat and Carl Pitera about Mobile Center, our favorite new features in the Creators Update, and the new Xbox Scorpio makes the PlayStation 4 Pro look like a kid's toy.
This episode of the MS Dev Show is brought to you by Espose, the market leader of .NET and Java APIs for file business formats. Natively work with DocX, XSLX, PPT, PDF, MSG, MPP, image formats, and many more.
This week we have Samina Passat and Carl Pitera, program managers from Mobile Center. Samina is focused on DevOps and Carl is focused on monitoring. How's it going, guys?
Hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Doing great.
So, Carl, what do we have for the comment of the week?
This week, we got the comment of the week off of our website from Christopher Canode. He had a pretty lengthy comment, said, "I enjoyed the show as always. In the news section, I'm really glad that you found the article going against unpaid overtime. It has been on my mind a lot. I think there are many people in IT who are routinely taken advantage of by their employers. At my previous job, our boss expected us to work 55 to 60 hours a week or else we weren't, quote, doing our job. As a developer, I do realize that there are times when we need to work extra to meet a deadline, and I've had to many, many times, but that should not be a weekly occurrence. In my view, the company is paying for 40 hours of time to perform development, and it is my responsibility to provide good service. My job may end at 40 hours a week, but what I do for my career continues on. After commuting time, taking care of family obligations, if you have free time, much of that is devoted, or in his case, to developing his skills as a developer. If I constantly work over, then that time to improve myself disappears. In the long time, I believe that it is in the best interest of companies to limit the work hours of their tech workers to a 40-hour a week." And I know Jason had a little bit of a contrarian point of view last time, but I think that was, you know, if you knew that you're going to be working, you know, 45, 55, 60 hours a week and the compensation was adjusted upwards for that, then it made sense. But if you are only getting paid for 40 hours a week and you're constantly doing more, then you are getting paid less per hour compared to other people.
Well, I think it's something that you should know ahead of time. If they tell you ahead of time that, hey, this job is 55 to 60 hours, but I think the biggest problem is that they don't tell you ahead of time. You know, you assume that it's 40 hours or a certain expectation of work. And I think I might've mentioned on the last show, but it's kind of like being gauged on number of lines of code written. Like we know that it doesn't work properly. And plus if you're working 60 hours a week and extra is required of you, good luck with that. Cause you're probably already burnt out. So I guess we sort of skipped over the fact too, that Carl and I are actually in the same room right now. So if you're watching the video, you can see that, I'm actually out in Wisconsin and we're trying things a little differently just because I happen to be here, but this will be our only episode where we're standing next to each other, for the foreseeable future. But
actually that might not be true. In a few weeks, we might be doing something next to each other.
Oh,
as well.
That's true. But, that's a good little tease there. But that'll be a little bit different than this.
All right. This week, the comment was sponsored by Espose, and Christopher gets a developer small business license for Espose Total for .NET, which includes all of the Espose .NET products in one package. And if you too would like to get mentioned on the show like Christopher did, send us an email to feedback@msdevshow.com, comment on Facebook, YouTube, or Stitcher. We especially love those 5-star iTunes reviews.
Perfect. Okay, let's jump into the news. So announcing custom domain HTTPS support with Azure CDN.
Yeah, so if you are utilizing the Azure CDN, you have to use HTTPS. And not only that, there's no additional cost for the cert. Microsoft's going to kick that in for free. So I thought that was a pretty cool little tip.
Okay. Oh, and this is on a custom domain as well?
Yeah, so you can get...
Oh, that's what this is. Oh, this is specifically around the custom domain. Okay,
so you can get a custom domain with HTTPS and a free cert, so it's nice and secure.
Okay. Everybody, use the CDN. Announcing the .NET Framework 4.7. I didn't even know that this was coming. This is cool.
Yeah, this blog post was written April 5th. I think it came out that day, too. So if you actually go look in Visual Studio, 2017. It'll be there for an update. You can install .NET 4.7 as well as the Windows 10 Creators Update SDK as well. That's in there for two. But in particular, the .NET Framework 4.7 includes a bunch of features that help out a lot of legacy things, like it brings high DPI support for Windows Form applications, touch support for WPF, enhancements around cryptography, and you know the normal performance and reliability improvements that we see elsewhere. Anything else that you wanted to mention about this?
Well, I think the first one there too is kind of important. .NET Framework 4.7 supporting .NET Standard 1.6, which I think is kind of a big deal as well. So we're seeing some good interop between those frameworks.
And then we do get the new C# 7 features in there as well. I think that some of these you might have to update some NuGet packages to get. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they're all available now with 4.7.
Okay. Very cool. Okay, what else we got here? Creators Update is out, sort of. So I think it officially gets starting. It starts getting pushed out on the 11th. That's the official day, but there's a couple ways that you can, or maybe not a couple ways. I guess there's like one way you can get early through the Insiders program. So if you're in the Insiders program, I think you can go out there and you can go out there and download the ISOs and you can update your machines. I don't know if there's any other way to get it.
There is an upgrade tool that can be used get up there faster.
Yeah. So I did want to talk about some of the key features in there too. Like what I think is important. My favorite place to check out is the settings app and kind of look through that and see what got it added there. So there's a couple features. One that I found that I wasn't expecting at all was internet sharing. I don't know if you guys have seen this, but you go in there and you can share your internet connection. It'll basically act as a Wi-Fi hotspot. But what's cool about it is you can share a wired or a wireless connection. So, you know, what is the scenario? So I've been on a plane before where I had, you know, Wi-Fi, or actually maybe even the better example is I've been to other companies where you have to authenticate against their Wi-Fi using some kind of crazy process. And or I was even at one customer where I had to physically wire in my machine. That was the only way to get internet access at their location. With this feature, you can turn this on. Your laptop will turn into a Wi-Fi hotspot, and then your phone or other devices connect to it. So you can basically share your internet through that device, which I think is pretty significant. So in the case where I was able to wire in my laptop, I would have been able to share that. And I think if you're like on a plane, you could share out like GoGo Wi-Fi and things like that. And then not have that captive portal where you have to put in the CAPTCHA and go through all of that ugly, horrible stuff. So to me, that's kind of a big deal. The old, at least in the old Surface Pro devices, I know there was a trick for doing it through the command line, but there was a networking feature that wasn't enabled. So it actually wasn't even possible. So even if you were kind of a hacker and wanted to get this to work, it wasn't supported. And now it's just an item on the settings panel, which is amazing. The other big thing, quiet hours can be 18 hours now. It used to be you could only have it be 12 hours. So you can actually have it go like super early to super late where... maybe quiet hours isn't the name of this. It's basically the period that you can pick where you won't get the update prompts or it won't automatically update your machine. So essentially you can have now just a 6-hour period at night in which, you're basically allowing your machine to get automatically updated. So that was a good feature. And then the last one that I wanted to point out was,
is that night shift?
Yeah. Night shift, which is basically, you know, it's basically flux, right? Where it shifts the blue light out of there at night, which supposedly makes it easier to sleep. And it does make it a little bit easier on the eyes as well. So those features now are all built into the Creators Update. I updated my Surface Book. So far it's been good. Some things seem a little bit faster. Time will tell if it's more stable, but I'm under the impression that that's going to be the case. So I don't know, Carl, if you had any features that you've been playing with or you want to mention anything.
So, you know, one of the things I think that the Windows Insider program actually kind of ruins for you in some cases is like you get used to this constant drip of new features.
Yeah.
So then when it's time for it to come out, it's like, all right, when's the next feature coming out?
Yeah. You know,
the new ones aren't so exciting if that's the case.
You've been ODing on features.
Yep.
So other Carl and Samina, I don't know. Have you guys played with Creators Update yet?
I haven't updated my Surface yet. Well, to be honest, we should be doing that this weekend.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, I haven't used it yet.
Oh, you guys are busy building stuff and doing work and, you know, those types of things.
Kind of.
Oh, nice. I like your picture there, Carl. Carl just pulled up a picture. It says, in quotes, seems faster. Yep, exactly. Just like my car always seems faster after I get an oil change. And then the last news item that we wanted to go over, either of you guys gamers?
Yeah.
No, Carl, Sabina, you guys gamers?
I'm not, but I used to work in Xbox, so yeah, I know a bit about Xbox.
Oh, okay. Okay, you can give us the inside scoop here because you have all the inside knowledge now. So the Project Scorpio specs were announced. I actually wasn't going over the specific specs, but I guess the information that was dropped here was that this thing is a beast. I don't know. Is there any specs here we want to mention? True 4K gaming. So I guess there was a demo of Forza at 4K at 60 frames per second. I guess there was still a ton of headroom on this thing. Basically, the articles, you know, of course, the sensational story is that this thing kind of destroys the PS4 Pro in terms of performance.
But it should, because it's coming out essentially a year later.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think they're done, right? Like PlayStation, I don't think there's like a Pro 2 or something, right? But yeah, I mean, it's the later product to the 4K game, and a lot more powerful. 12 gigabytes of memory, 6 teraflop GPU. Yeah, pretty much everybody analyzing these specs. Again, I don't really know how to interpret all these, but they're saying it kind of crushes everything that exists out there from a console perspective.
And for me personally, it's not going to be more interesting until we can start getting ready to buy these. So
yeah, yeah. So no, yeah,
but
no.
Still, when you say like Forza in 4K,
yeah, I know.
I'm already addicted to it.
No, stop. Because it's kind of interesting. I have a 1080p 70-inch TV, and I actually had to rent a DVD recently. It was a kids movie that my kids want. It was Trolls, I think. And it was 480p, and I popped that in and played it. And actually, from the distance that I sit from the TV, it actually was it really didn't look much different than 1080p. So I was kind of on the, you know, I've been sitting here waiting for, you know, an excuse to go out and get 4K. So like I hope this thing's delayed or something. Like I don't need this in my life, because if I know that this exists, it's going to make me want to go out and get a new, you know, 4K TV, and that's just going to be a whole journey. Step one, actually, for me, I went out and bought like the 4K Roku, so that's kind of like my foot in the 4K door, but I don't know. I'm trying to, Carl's got to hold me back. Be strong for me, Carl. Okay. So let's jump into Mobile Center. So this has been, Mobile Center has been out, I think, a few months, right?
Since November.
In November. Yeah. So it's been out for a few months. And, you know, it's been kind of a shame that we haven't talked about it on the show, but I think we're just waiting for the right timing here. And I think that kind of the culmination of a lot of stuff that you guys have been working on has all come together. So it's just a great time to talk about it. So I guess we'll start with the basics, you know, for anybody who hasn't heard about it, like, what is Mobile Center?
You want to
start? Yeah, I can start. So Mobile Center is basically a control center for app developers. Mm-hmm. And the goal is really to help app developers throughout the whole life cycle of creating an app. So from the very first start, when you start pushing code to your repo, making sure that we automate all the steps there to allow you to go faster and be more productive, down to understanding what's happening in your app, what's in the field, in the phones of your users. So
yeah.
Mobile Center really covers all these aspects.
Yeah, and you can think about it that, you know, developers are using an IDE to write their code. And the way I like to think about it is that everything else, they can find it in Mobile Center.
Yep.
You know, they don't have to go to one service to set up a build or continuous integration, and to another service to set up monitoring, and to another service to set up analytics. You have everything in one single place, and you get it in one UI and one mission control.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, because this brought together like a whole bunch of services that were in different locations, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then do those services exist in their old locations? Were they moved? Were they kind of, you know, are they exposed in two places?
So that's a great question. And actually, part of that move was also to unify SDKs, unify API surfaces, because definitely Microsoft has been investing a lot in mobile, like mobile first motto, but definitely we had a lot of unique products with different SDKs, different APIs. So I think that's a great move to make sure that we bring everything with a uniform experience, which definitely improves both productivity and developer experience.
Yeah, it really reminds me of like the new VS 2017 experience, you know, the new installer, where you go in there and it's sort of scenario based. And I really like that approach better. It's like, hey, what are you trying to do? Like, what type of person are you? So I think this acknowledges the fact that, you know, there are mobile developers and they have a set of needs that is all uniform. So I think it makes a lot of sense from that perspective.
Yeah, and to your point, I think one important thing to mention is that Mobile Center is still in preview. So we announced it in November, but we are super actively working on it. And for really production apps, we still have the old services which are being maintained. So like if somebody, you know, wants to have this, I know, the future most successful app, I think they should definitely consider Mobile Center. But if it's, you know, if they wanted to put it out in production, it's still a preview product. So, yeah, there are some small things to consider them.
I was like, I would totally ignore you. I just use it.
well, I would do it as well. But, you know, we have to point it out.
Disclaimer, yeah.
And we're iterating really super fast on Mobile Center.
Yeah.
So I was looking, and to like log into this, you log into like a visualstudio.com URL. So is Azure still a big part of this? Do I need Azure or is it all through this centralized portal?
So actually the visualstudio.com part is more like the product/marketing page. But when you actually want to log into Mobile Center, you go to mobile.azure.com. And that's also because the product really is in the cloud. So you build in the cloud, you test in the cloud, you distribute from the cloud. So that's what makes it a strong tie to Azure. But because it's a tool to help developers, that's why there is that Visual Studio starting point and Visual Studio brand.
And you don't really need, like, if you're a brand new person with a Microsoft ecosystem, you don't need to worry about any other subscriptions. Mm. It's like it's a standalone product. Okay. So even though the URL is mobile.azure.com, it doesn't mean that you actually need an Azure subscription. You don't.
Okay. That's kind of what I was wondering about, because I think that can be intimidating. You know, somebody's like, I'm just a mobile developer and I want to use some of these, you know, because the competition is really like these SaaS services that do, you know, this or that. And to come over to the Microsoft side and say, hey, you need to have an Azure subscription, and then you got to go kind of hunt and peck for these different services. I think this is just a much nicer story for the developers, for sure.
Yeah. And in fact, when we started working on it, for one of the first login types we had was sign up with GitHub. Yeah. Because we know that many developers live on GitHub. So that was one of our first social authentication, if you can call it this way.
Yeah, I saw that in there. That's very cool.
And as you start needing to use Azure together with Mobile Center, we have a place where it's super easy to link your Azure subscription to Mobile Center, but you don't need to do it at the very start. So you can just start exploring it. You plug in your GitHub account or your Microsoft account, and you're there, ready to go.
Okay. And then what were kind of the core scenarios that you guys had in mind building this? You know, like what was the, you know, if you're picturing like a certain persona for the person using it, what did that look like?
Well, I would say we have generally like two big areas of the product, and we can imagine that there's different personas using them either together or separately. And I think one of these pieces is the piece of mobile DevOps. So the whole, you know, you build your app, you do continuous integration, you test it, do automated UI testing in the cloud, and then you distribute it either to your internal testers, to maybe external testers, or in the end out to the store. So that's one of the part which kind of helps developing the app and bringing it, you know, getting incremental feedback and getting the app to get this 5-star app that you want to be. But then you actually have to learn about the app, and maybe Carl wants to talk a bit about that part.
Yeah, definitely. So the point is that when you're putting an app in the hands of people, be they testers or actual end users, you want definitely to reach to that 5-star. So you were saying earlier you want a 5-star podcast, and app developers, they want 5-star in the store. And we want to help them achieve that. So that goes hand in hand with understanding what end users are doing, what they are liking, what they are not liking, any quality issues, so crash, making sure that you get proper crash reporting, both sizing the problem, but also understanding what people experience with the app. So bringing the best tools to help you understand the quality of your app, but also fix any problems with quality. And then at some point engaging them in the app. But all that works if you're able to iterate fast on that. And that's where we tie the story together, because in order to do that, you want to get that software as fast as possible in the hand of your testers or the hand of end user. And that's where it goes back to the DevOps part, where, well, I just, you know, like improved that feature. It was hidden. I understood from my analytics that it was people were not really discovering it. I made it more prominent. And now I hope they like it and they are going to use it. But how long does it take for them, from either testers or end users, to actually experience that? And well, as a developer, I just want to commit my code and then it goes. And that's what we are trying to do, is like, I just, you know, like git commit and boom. A few minutes later, you receive an update saying, hey, you can download the new version. Mm-hmm.
I love the first comment on there about the, you know, we're just trying to get you 5-star reviews. No, I love that because that summarizes almost everything else, because if you make the developer's life easier, if you make that whole process easier, mm-hmm. and you make it so that you can improve the quality, the crashing, all that, that all feeds into just getting 5-star reviews, which is going to make you more money or more visibility or whatever. So I just love that beginning summary. I just wanted to comment on that.
So I was wondering which platforms are supported in, or mobile platforms are supported in Mobile Center.
So we started back in November, and we started with iOS, Objective-C, and Swift. So both of these ones, then Android Java, and as well as Xamarin, and then we added React Native, mm-hmm. and by popular demand, we are now working hard on UWP support.
Okay,
it's coming very soon.
Yeah. Okay. Really soon.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect. Yeah, Carl was asking about that before the show. He's like, "This is I want this for UWP." So.
Well, especially since some of the initial documentation I saw said Xamarin, and then it said only Xamarin iOS and mm-hmm. Xamarin Android, because I know sometimes you can get some of those Xamarin SDKs to support UWP as well. So it's good to hear that that's going to be an option going forward.
Yeah,
definitely. I think the goal and the spirit that Microsoft has been having for the past few years was to show and demonstrate openness. And I think that's what we've been trying to do as well, to say, hey, this is not a product just focused on Windows and the UWP platform.
Yeah.
It's really a product for any mobile platform. So we started there, but of course, we are not forgetting UWP developers. On the contrary, we want to be to be providing even better tools. So for sure, we are at work on that platform, and it will come very soon.
Okay.
Espose offers a powerful set of file management APIs with which developers can create applications, which can create, open, edit, and save the majority of popular business file formats. Their product range supports a multitude of file formats, including Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint presentations, PDF documents, OneNote, Outlook, Project, Visio files, popular image formats, and many others. Espose produces APIs for .NET, Java, and the cloud, which can be utilized in almost any modern language available today. Visit www.espose.com for a free 30-day no-limitations trial. And if you get stuck, message the friendly support team for help. All technical support is offered free of charge. Remember, if you're a lucky winner, You will receive a free developer small business license for Expose.Words for .NET, a powerful toolkit to work with Word documents in your applications.
I love it. It really shows the new Microsoft, though, that we launch with, or I shouldn't say launch. I mean, it's still in preview. So in preview, we have iOS and Android and UWP being right around the corner. Mm-hmm. I think that's really cool to see. So I figured what we'd do is we'd actually just walk through a whole bunch of the features so we can just, you know, kind of deep dive into those. So I was kind of hoping you could walk us through those. And I have kind of a short list here, and you'll have to just let us know if we miss anything. But the first thing is building an app. So can you tell us what that does exactly?
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, as a developer, we write the code, and something that everybody does is git commit and then push the code. And what the build service does is that we take the code from the repository and we transform it in a package that can be, you know, we can run unit tests or we can run UI tests on, and then finally distribute it to the users. And I think we have some really nice features in this build service package. One of my favorite one is that it's so easy to use. Like, I remember from a few years ago when I had to set up continuous integration and it was a burden for me. I was like, okay, that's going to take like at least 1 week of my time. I have to, you know, set up this local server and I have to, you know, have a build machine and like such a big pain. And right yeah. now it's just, you know, we do a lot of analysis on top of the repositories. So users just have to, you know, select my CS project and select my version and select some easy things like build on push or run unit test and then click OK. And that's it.
My favorite one is actually, you know, like uploading the certificates yeah. and the provisioning profile, like exactly. just like drag and drop mm-hmm. and feels easy.
Right. It's so easy. And you don't have, you know, especially for iOS developers out there, that's a big problem when they want to use continuous integration, that they usually have to provide their own Mac hardware for the build server. So yep. one thing is using your own hardware for developing, which is staying, it's not going anywhere. But then I know a bunch of people who use some other continuous integration and they have, you know, a rack somewhere or a shelf in their office and they're keeping the Mac hardware there. Yep. And then you have to update it all the time to have the right version and everything. And one of my favorite parts is that we take that away from the developers and we are taking care of everything. So we have the Mac hardware, we have the Mac cloud, we provide clean VMs for every single build. So, you know, everything is super secure and sandboxed. And yeah, it's just super easy. You know, you just click a few buttons and then you have your own VM provision with the right Xcode version, with the right, like, every single tool that you need is in there. So you don't have to worry about setting all of this up.
So if I have an iOS app mm-hmm. in GitHub, you guys will handle the build for me?
Yep.
Okay.
Yes. And what's really... Yeah,
just call that magic, yeah.
And what's really funny, and you know, the way I usually demonstrate it at conferences and to people is that, and I'm more on the other side where on the monitoring, which we'll talk about later. But at some point I say, hey, I want to show you how that works. So I commit my tracking of events and things like that. And automatically you see on Mobile Center that, of course, it's linked with my GitHub repo and it picked up the commit. You know, like automatically, you don't have to do any refresh or whatever. The build is pending. It's starting. You see the logs flowing and then it's done. So succeed, fails, whatever. It depends on what I did in the code, actually. But at least, you know, like you get it there and I didn't need it anything. So
so I'm just picturing you. So you like check in some code and then for the whole presentation, you just like. You just stand there.
Yeah, you know, like, he takes the guitar and he starts playing.
Exactly. But you just like pick up the mic every once in a while, just drop it.
Yeah, next time I'll take a ukulele and start playing.
That's a good demo.
So the next category that we had looked to cover was test. And it's not that these are necessarily unit tests, but these are testing on actual devices for us. How does that work?
I actually like that feature a lot because, you know, when you develop an app and you want it to be out there in the stores used by real people, people have so many devices. Like, really, if somebody can imagine that they can test manually an app on every single device, or even do UI testing in their own lab and cover every device out there, I would love to hear how they do it. Like, seriously, I would love to hear how they do it and how many people they spend and how much time they spend on that.
I can tell you, I mean, my previous company, we had like tons of iPhones and Androids, and it would cost a ton of money, and you never had the right cable. And
and the test service.
I had a lot of extra chargers and earbuds. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
The test service really takes away all this pain of handling, you know, the devices, having the device on the right operating system, keeping old operating systems as well, because you don't want to update all your devices. Mm-hmm. So we have our own data center with thousands of combinations, you know, different languages, different devices, both Android and iOS. You can have there all the iPhones, iPads, all
can
the tables.
Can we call it a data center? Shouldn't we call it like a device center?
Yeah, I guess so.
I'd like to actually see that. I think that'd be interesting to see, like, all these devices crammed into the small area. That'd be kind of interesting to see.
Well, I think that's, you brought up something else that, you know, like, we don't always think about either. Even if you had, like, all these devices, you know, I would probably only have them set to English or, you know, maybe one or two others.
Yeah.
I wouldn't think to have them in all these different combinations.
Yeah, you need a double byte language. You need, languages that are just longer. Yeah.
Yeah.
So is this related to Xamarin Test Cloud at all? Because
exactly.
It's a very similar thing. Or, I mean, is it just this rebranded?
Yeah, the way we think about Mobile Center is that it is the next generation of Xamarin Test Cloud, especially for the test service. Mm-hmm. And for, I think, for the distribution and monitoring part is the next version of a Hockey app. So you brought up a really good point is, yes, we are looking to bring everything in one place, and Xamarin Test Cloud is one of the services that is coming in here.
Yeah, and it's funny because whenever we think about the Xamarin acquisition, we think like, oh, that's a great way to get that and then get more people on the platform. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we kind of forget that whole test cloud came over as well. And it's not like it doesn't feel like it's shoehorned in here. Like this is like, we needed that as well. So I think people forget about that, but that is an amazingly good service. Yep. Super important. And then, what about distributing my app? So how do I actually do that?
Yeah. I mean, I think all of this cycle comes in naturally. As Carl was saying, you know, you say, he starts tracking events and great, you have a build, you have tested your build, but then you actually, that's the essential part. You want to put it in the hand of your users, you know, regardless whether they are internal testers. In Microsoft, we do it with all these, you know, all the company dog fooding our own stuff.
Yep.
And or to external testers, that's actually the distribution part where you get the package that was firstly built and then tested, you put it actually in the hands of users. And that's when you are able to start monitoring and learning from their behavior. And then once you learn, you go make a change and then you go through the same cycle again. So it's all of it is together. Mm-hmm.
So the nice thing is that you can define some groups of people. So when you define your build, you can say, hey, this needs to go to like my alpha QA or to my beta QA or to actually external testers or all of them. And they will just get them, you know, like, again, you commit and then build, test, distribute.
And they get this cool in-app update, you know, or you can even force them to have the app updated. For them, it's like super easy as a user to use it. You don't have to, you know, go to some internal web page where you have to log in with some credentials and to download some package on your phone and then to put it via USB. It's just now you get everything in-app update on your phone and that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. As a user, you know, of that service, like within Microsoft, it is great. I can go and it's kind of like a internal store of all those applications. And then, you know, I get to help out with dog fooding and that type of thing. But then what about distributing to the actual app stores then? Is that all handled as well? Because I noticed you mentioned the certificates before. So can it also push like directly into those stores for updates?
Coming soon.
Okay.
So today you can build, you know, we have support for certificates and for building every variation of the app, whether it's a debug, ad hoc, or release version. So you can definitely build it today and sign it the proper way and package it in such a way that it's ready for the app store, for the Play store, for whatever store. And the ability to publish directly from Mobile Center is also coming soon.
Okay, so there's just one extra step today, which isn't, I mean, I wasn't expecting you to directly publish to that. So that's cool. That's just a bonus.
So you mentioned that part of this comes from Hockey App as well. So we get to like the crash monitoring part of this as well. So do we get like full native crash dumps like when we, you know, when those do happen?
Yes, definitely. So we redesign SDKs for Mobile Center so that they are small, modular, and very easy to use. So now with basically dropping the SDK in the app and one line, you get two things if you choose so. You get crash reporting and the basic analytics. And on the crash side, definitely we basically get the crash, give you the opportunity as a developer to create an opt-in mechanism because you end users should be in control of whether they are willing to share what's happening on their device or not. So as a developer, you can activate these opt-in consent mechanisms. But if the consent is positive, then yes, we will send the crashes to the backend, and then we have the analysis of crashes. So we have two main things. One, the analytics of crashes, which means we are going to count the crash, to count users, so device-free, crash-free devices, things like that, as well as the full stack trace that we will symbolicate on iOS. And of course, on Android, we have the normal stack trace. But on iOS, we'll also symbolicate the stack trace for you to have an understandable stack trace with file names and line numbers and everything to help you as a developer understand what happened. We have also things like most affected devices, most affected model, so that it can be a hint. And at the moment, we're adding new stuff around it, because when you see a stack trace, you don't necessarily understand, you know, it doesn't necessarily point to the immediate problem. Actually, your app may be crashing, but it may be crashing because something happened way before. So our goal is to provide you as many hints as possible on the environment, the device itself, the conditions, potentially events, things like that. So we are going to provide you as many things as we can so that you really understand the context and you can basically understand your problem faster and most importantly, fix it.
Yeah. So are you using Application Insights or is that something I'd also use? Like, how do those things relate?
So that's coming really from the experience and a big portion of the code we had in Hockey App, where we have a really solid way of grouping crashes together, understanding, you know, like the nature of the crash, grouping them together. And that's a very important part of our technology so that we provide you crashes that are grouped together, that make sense and avoid too much noise.
Okay.
So are there a few other things, you know, I'm thinking about for analytics that you do automatically, like which features might be used a lot or not at all? Is that something that I get out of the box or do I have to do something for that?
So as I was saying, you basically drop the SDK in the app, just start it with the one line, and you get basically the crash reporting, but also a good portion of analytics. So specifically, we have an audience page in the analytics where you understand that basically we answer a bunch of questions around how many users do I have, what models, what OS version they're on, what app version are they on, is my new version well deployed, what country they're in, what language they speak. So really trying to understand the conditions of your user base, of your audience, and you get that, yeah, definitely instantly with just one line integration. So that's something that you get really easily. Now for the feature usage, you will have to instrument your app by sending events. And you can send basically events by designing them by a name and some key value pairs in order to characterize the event, and we will show you distributions of these key value pairs, basically to for you to understand not only the usage of features or pages and things like that, but also some specific characteristics about these events. That can be, for example, I don't know if you have a news app or an app for your podcast, and you want to understand like which one is listened to. If you have an event like Listen, you will have the statistic of you know, like the most listened in order.
Yeah, oh, no, I think
we already know it's this episode.
I think for the events feature, what I really love is, you know, there's so many times when within a team there are arguments, you know, what should we do next? Should we invest in this feature versus another feature? You know, is this feature really used? And you really look at the data, and the data is right there, and you can, you know, it just adds another dimension to the argument, because you know how many people are using it, how are using it, how often they're using it, and you can just like take really, you can take decisions and try it out for a few weeks, and then you see the data and you can compare them, and there you go, you find out it's like, doesn't make sense to argue with your team anymore.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Carl's fiddling with our show notes here.
Oh, sorry.
Do you want to ask this one, Carl?
So another feature that you had on there was tables. It looks like it's a way to you know, store information locally, but also potentially in the cloud.
Yeah, definitely. So tables is really the easy tables you find in Azure that allows you to do offline sync. We believe that that's something that's really helpful for developer as a mobile backend to be able to store the data in the cloud, and you know, like without too much effort, making sure that you handle these scenarios where you can get disconnected because you're in the subway or you're in some place that doesn't have a network, but you still want to continue to use your app, and well, this will handle that for you.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. And then what about identity? So what kind of identity, you know, what do you do from a support standpoint there?
Yeah, I think that's similar when you think about it as tables. It's, you know, the way we think about it is that every great app also needs a great backend. And there's a few core features that, you know, every app needs. One of them is the tables part, but another core feature is the identity part as well. So what you really get there is, you know, a simple way, unified way to using the most important identity providers out there. Okay. So, you know, you can think about Facebook and such big social networks.
Okay. Were there any big features that we missed?
We didn't miss any from what's in now, but something that we're working on right now is push. And that's something also that should come very soon.
Push notifications?
Push notifications.
Yes. Oh, okay. Very cool. Very cool.
So is the current Azure notifications feature going to migrate to Mobile Center then? Or is this?
So again, like for every other products, you know, like just like we have distribute in Mobile Center, that's that inherits from Hoki app. Definitely the push feature inherits from the experience and definitely builds on Notification Hub, which is an amazing feature that allows you to push very quickly and inexpensively to a lot of devices. And of course, we are building on that experience and that quality.
Awesome.
And another part that we added recently, and it's not really a specific feature, but I think it's really useful for bigger teams, is the support for organizations. So then, you know, if you're a bigger team, you can start using a Mobile Center together as a team, and then you have different roles, and you can, you know, you have the manager role and the developer role, so you can really get a bit more fine-grained access control, which is really useful, especially, you know, when you're this team of two devs working on a small app, maybe it's not that useful, but as soon as you have a bit of a bigger team, you really want to start having some access control in there and to have certain people have access to some things.
No, that's good, because that was one of the biggest issues with the Windows Store, was for a long time, it was just like a single login, and then that person would leave the company or something like that. These big organizations, that was always a huge pain point. They wanted the multiple levels of control there for sure.
Definitely. This has been asked really a lot.
Yeah.
So as a preview product, this is something that is free. Do you have any announcements or any idea what this is going to cost when it does go GA?
So we don't have any announcements. We are, of course, actively working on the pricing aspect, but at this stage, we are not talking about it.
Okay. And then any, you guys actually mentioned some like upcoming features while we were talking about it. Are there any other upcoming features that you guys wanted to mention?
I mean, we release new features, I think, every single week, yeah. And we announce them every second week. So probably usually every Wednesday or Thursday, active users get an email and it's like, hey, okay. That's what we released last week. And I think we will have soon. So for the build part, until now we had GitHub support, and we added Bitbucket 2 weeks ago. And in the next few weeks, very soon, VSTS support is coming soon. So whatever Git repos you have in VSTS and you have mobile apps, you'll be able to build them with Mobile Center.
Okay. Yeah, because VSTS has come a long way and it's become an amazing product. So that's good to hear.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that one.
Yes. I'm sure a lot of people are. Anything else you guys wanted to mention before we move on? I think we covered everything.
Nothing comes to mind.
Okay. So, Carl, what do you have for the Azure pick of the week?
For the Azure pick of the week, something we haven't talked in a while about is Azure Stack. Mm-hmm. There's a new technical preview that includes a whole bunch of new services, including Azure Functions. So if you have Azure Stack running in your own enterprise, you have these newer Azure features available to you. So it's not just something that you need to have a public subscription for.
You're going to dive in? You're just going to, well, I guess we'll leave this in the show notes.
We'll leave it in the show notes so you can check it. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in there.
Ooh, Azure Functions.
Yes, that's why I mentioned it for you, Jason.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. Okay, so we'll have a link to that in the show notes. And, you know, me traveling out to Wisconsin here, I forgot the cards at home. So we don't have that game this week, unfortunately. So you guys don't get on the fun of playing a game that was designed apparently by 10-year-olds for 8-year-olds. So I'll just leave it at that. So where can people find more information about you guys and about Mobile Center?
So the best avenue really to find information about Mobile Center is to go to mobile.azure.com. Okay. Just sign up. It's super easy, as we said, GitHub, Bitbucket, Microsoft account, login password, super easy. It like takes 5 seconds. And then on the bottom right, you have an icon where you can chat with our team. It's really the best thing to get in touch with us. We respond really quickly when we're awake, but we respond really quickly. And actually, a lot of people have been saying to us that it's amazing to be able to have an interactive discussion with the team that actually creates the product. So that's a great avenue. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we can be reached on Twitter.
We're on Twitter.
Okay.
My handle is Simina Passat, and my name.
Yeah, Twikarl, so TWIKARL.
We'll have those in the show notes so that people can get to those. And Carl, he's signing up right now for Mobile Center, by the way. There, he's in.
You can find me on Twitter at Carl Schweitzer.
And you can find me at ytechie.com or on Twitter at twitter.com/ytechie. So, guys, thank you so much for coming on here and talking about Mobile Center. Very cool product.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, I'm really excited about what you guys are doing.
Thank you so much.